Jeffrey, Amelia has a pink eye and it's terrible. I'm your host, Amelia, and I have pink eye. It sucks.
And I'm Sarah, and I have been answering a lot of texts about pink eye because I went to nursing school to stop Amelia from getting illness, and I am failing.
God, you're feeling so bad. Why didn't you tell me in advance that I shouldn't be constantly sticking my fingers into my eye after, like, rubbing them along a Burger King counter?
Well, Amelia, I guess I just figured that at some point you just needed to get an infectious disease that would teach you a lesson about hygiene and living in the wilderness and not gouging your eyes out after you stick both of your thumbs up your ass.
Sarah, if your goal was to prevent me from gouging my eyes out, you failed horribly because I am literally amazed that I haven't managed to poke my own eyeball out. Like, literally just digging my thumb under there and just popping it out.
So?
I did not know it was possible for a part of my body to itch this much.
Well, here on Crack
Sarah,
Spines.
I went to the doctor twice.
I know.
Two times.
The same doctor or just two different doctors across the state of Arizona?
Same doctor.
Oh my
Somehow
god.
Somehow that makes it worse. I know. It's like, if they didn't get it the first time, what did I expect to happen?
You went crawling back on your hands and knees and said, "It's me, Amelia Fisher. I'm the host of Cracked Spines. We might want to say our name ever." I mean, it's in the title, but people
know. They know who we are.
They know who we are. And anyway, I can't see anything, and I've been texting my friend. What put in eye? Lemon juice?
Yeah.
Salt?
I crawl there on my hands and knees, but with my face dragging along the ground.
And the doctor was like, "See, this is your first problem."
Oh, boy. It actually, honestly, reading the book that we did this week, which, do you want to just go ahead and start talking about it?
Yes.
I know I set it up like I was going to talk about my horrific medical issues this entire podcast, but I thought maybe we could do like a 5-minute segment on the book before getting back to the important stuff.
Cool. Yeah, because let me tell you, if this podcast is anything like our recent phone conversations, it's going to be 30 minutes about your eyes, 30 minutes about how the terror is doing, and then like 5 minutes at the end where we're like, and anything new with you?
Speaking of the terror, y'all thought we were done with that.
The Toonbuck isn't the only thing out there on the ice.
So actually, that is kind of the reason that we decided to read this book. And I'm saying this myself because you said 5 minutes ago that you were going to drag me for it, and I'm taking it from you. So they did mention, I believe, I think that the creators actually mentioned the thing being kind of a reference point. Because, I mean, it's like you can't...
Ooh, that's really interesting.
And actually, as I'm saying that aloud, I'm like, oh, that would have been a good thing to research. catch our updates on that on Twitter, I guess, except I will forget.
Catch our third episode on the terror.
Exactly.
Amelia reads aloud her extensive meta on why Fitzjames's pauldrons symbolize colonialism.
I could swing that. I could figure something
out. You could get 10,000 words out of that one.
So, it is kind of hard to talk about any form of Arctic horror without talking about The Thing, which is a movie by John Carpenter, based off of another movie, I think, that came out earlier, or am I misremembering that?
There are a bunch of...
Yeah.
There's three adaptations of The Thing now. Okay, so there's like a 1950s version, which is, I think, The Thing from Outer Space, which is not super accurate to the novella, which is what we read. The title of the novella is called Who Goes There, which is a bad title.
No, it's not. I like it.
Oh my god.
I like it.
You like the title,
like
Who Goes There?
The title, literally the title and the first two pages, I was like, holy shit, this is so good. And then I guess we'll get into how my opinions shifted over the course of the book. But yeah, I really liked the title.
Really?
I didn't... Okay, you know what, Sarah? Clearly, we have our differences on what makes a good title.
Remember when we've had like, God, months long, off and on arguments about whether Edge of Tomorrow is a good title?
Sarah... Edge of Tomorrow came out, like, 4 years ago. This has been an argument since then. This is probably... That, whether or not Edge of Tomorrow or Live, Die, Repeat is a better title is probably going to be the argument that eventually destroys our friendship. Because I remember last time we talked about it, I was genuinely angry at you. I don't know if you caught that.
No, I didn't. I was too busy explaining that Live, Die, Repeat is not a good title, but is a better title than Edge of Tomorrow.
Specifically, what happened was, I was like, well, I like the title Edge of Tomorrow, and you were like, well, it's a bad title. And I literally was like, maybe I didn't slam my fist on the table, but I did in my heart, and I was like, don't tell me it's a bad title when I just said that I liked it.
I'm sorry, babe, I didn't mean to invalidate your bad opinions on titles.
Listen, Sarah, fuck you. Who Goes There is a good title.
Who Goes There at the Edge of Tomorrow? Knock, knock. Who's there? Tomorrow. Tomorrow who? Nothing but the Edge.
Live, die, thing, repeat.
Live, thing, repeat. Live, thing, repeat?
Listen, we're maybe getting a bit off track here. Why don't you think Who Goes There is a good title?
I don't know. It's just bad, Amelia. I don't know how to say it. It's a dumb title.
Well, you know, I think this is really, this right here is what people really come to our podcast for. You know, that cutting analysis, that in-depth critique.
Listen, okay, so it's had a bunch, so if you think this story has had basically three different titles, Who Goes There, The Thing from Outer Space, and The Thing. And of those, I think The Thing is the most iconic in terms of talking about, like, we are dealing with something we can't even describe. What is it? The Thing. Who Goes There asks the question that The Thing answers, but Who Goes There is also such a weird, archaic form, by which I mean, it's such a classic sci-fi phrase. Like,
yeah,
I'm okay.
Which, this was a very classic sci-fi book, in good ways and bad.
This is such a classic genre of men explaining science to other men, and also just the amount of off-screen action that happens in this, the amount of dying, death, and murder that, like is done by a man coming into the room and being like, well, he's dead. Someone stabbed him.
And it was interesting because, you know, I had seen the movie first, and the movie The Thing is one of my all-time favorite horror movies. So I came to this novella from watching the movie, and I thought it was really interesting because, you're right, there is so much off-screen action, and I didn't really expect that in a book, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I guess I kind of expected it to be at least as described as the movie, because a lot of times in a horror movie, you don't want to show stuff at all. Whenever you can. But that's really the exact opposite of what The Thing does. And again, I don't know, do you want to just commit to, like, talking about the movie and the book at the same time?
Let's do that, because with the caveat that I watched the movie in high school, and I have never seen it since, but I remembered deeply enjoying it. Yeah, I was, it's actually showing at the movie theater I work at tonight, but unfortunately—
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm so tired that the thought of leaving my house right now is just...
God, I wish I could just teleport.
I
would literally carry you over my shoulders.
I wish you were here for a variety of reasons, but not the least of which I feel like I would go to the movies more often.
And I would stick my eye into my eye and then into your eye, and I'd be like, we are twins now.
You would stick...
My pain is your pain.
You would stick your eye into your eye?
Listen, Sarah, my brain functions have been significantly deteriorated by all of the probing up at my frontal lobe I've been doing.
You've leaked a lot of brain matter out your tear ducts.
Yeah.
Horrifying. So, I would love to talk about the movie, with the caveat that I have very little memory of it. So here's what I remember.
Okay.
Dog running in the snow. Cut to men in a base looking around. Cut to, I think, the xenomorph is bursting out of a guy's stomach. I might be splicing in a different film. Then there's, like, a big tentacle, and it's, like, slimy. And then,
I don't like where this is going.
Then there's, like, a snowstorm, and then there's, like, two guys at the end, and they're like, I don't trust you. I don't trust you. Here's some whiskey. God, this is a good ending. And that's sort of...
That's such a good ending!
That's sort of roughly what I got. Hey, how many stories that you love end in a man or men sitting and thinking on ice?
It's a good look, Sarah.
Just waiting for their deaths, you know, at the hands of forces they can't understand.
Crozier did all right.
or I don't remember much about the movie, except really liking it and really liking the atmosphere. And it was interesting that the overwhelming sense of paranoia, which is really my main takeaway from the movie, the sense that you can't trust anyone around you, you can't even trust that they're human, which is, like, so good when you're isolated and you also, you're so claustrophobic. I didn't find that atmosphere nearly as present in the book because, like, just something about the writing style. It's that classic sci-fi writing style of almost this detachment.
Oh, really? Because I was going to say it's the kind of writing style where at any moment I expected a character to be like, good God, it's learning how to do something, you know, like the kind of thing where you expect that the... Yeah, like, the first page, I was like, this kind of reminds me of The Road. And then, like, immediately after that, I was like, nope, this is Asimov.
Yes. I was recently reading The Exorcist, and it's interesting the way that certain phrases do not age very well, and certain writing styles do not age very well, which means they're not bad. You know, both this book and The Exorcist are good. Yeah, but you'll have someone just be like, I mean, Jesus, Peezus, you know, what are we gonna do
here? Oh my God, does somebody say that in The Exorcist?
They say that multiple times in The Exorcist.
Oh my God. Okay, well, cards on the table. I haven't started it yet, so I guess we're putting that on hold for a bit, but
yeah,
I am now a compelling reason to really get going on that.
But it's similar to when you read, like, you know, you mentioned Asimov. I think that's a great touch point here, because I think we both read the short story collection By Jupiter.
Yes, we did.
Which is...
I stole it immediately after you were done with it.
Which is, the title itself is a pun based off advertising, the concept of advertising on the planet Jupiter, you know. It's that kind of, both the phrase By Jupiter, like, by Jupiter, the monster is learning, and then also the willingness to make the pun a title is like this.
I didn't even realize it was a pun.
Oh my God.
That's like the worst kind of pun.
I
didn't know that By Jupiter, B-Y Jupiter, is a thing that anyone has said.
Well, that's the thing. That is a phrase that's not aged well. It's one of those things of sci-fi where classic sci-fi can seem both super forward thinking and also so dated.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the Foundation series?
I read the first one. Yeah. So I kind of know what you mean by that.
Yeah. I only ask because there's a real fucked up relationship in, like, book 2 and 3.
I didn't get to that yet. I do really want. Literally, that was the reason why I read the first one. So I might eventually get around to it.
Isaac Asimov doesn't dig very deep into the weird psychosexual dynamics at play.
I'll take the psychosexual dynamic to Mordor.
It's probably a good thing he doesn't, just considering the general way he writes.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I don't think that I'd especially want to see... By Jove! Okay, I don't even know what would come after that explanation, but...
There's, like, no sentence I want to finish here that I would feel, like, good about putting forward. But the one I was thinking was, by Jove, you found the prostate.
Oh my God. No, that's very good.
By Jupiter, the man fellatiates like a god.
Oh my God, Sarah, please stop.
Anyway. Yeah, no, both of my parents are home. So... Do you want to talk about The Thing?
Yes, I would love to. So I actually really love the way that it begins, which is with a description of how absolutely horrible everything in this Antarctic base smells, which I found funny. It's like, why does everything in cold locations immediately smell so bad? Like, that was definitely a point we touched on in The Terror as well. Mm. And I can't remember whether it was, like, a thing that they explicitly spell out, like, in the text, like... This is, like, a bunch of men living in an enclosed space with no running water for, like, 4 years. Of course, it smells like the inside of a shoe that a dog took a shit in. But then, like, so the book starts with a description of how everything smells so bad, but then, like, it kind of transfers into this description of a different smell that they said, let me see if I can read it. It was a queer, neck-ruffling thing, a faintest suggestion of an odor alien among the smells of industry and life. See, you literally can't read this without that tone of voice, right? What, like, it's that kind of book. And it was a life smell, but it came from the thing that lay bound with cord and tarpaulin. Is that how you say it?
Oh. Tarpaulin. That's the name of my elf in my D&D quest.
But, like, I loved that, that introduction. And then, unfortunately, the characters came in. And it all went downhill from there for me.
I think the only thing you need to know about the writing style of this book is that the word queer is used twice on the first page to describe the like something being strange. And that is just such a slice of time for me in sci-fi. Like, there's, like, I feel like there's a while there, and I don't have much evidence to back this up, so enjoy this literary discussion.
Yeah, what podcast do you think we're on, Sarah?
But I feel like there's a time there where queer was the go-to word for monsters, aliens, ghosts, and the unexplainable. Which is why it's my sexual identity.
I know, I was gonna say.
But, and it's such a quaint word when it's used like that. It's such a quaint word, but also such a... gods, you know, my god, he's changing kind of word. Like, it really
does... Jove, it's the queerest thing. It seems you found the prostate. See, the worst part is the more we reference that, the more I absolutely have to keep it in.
Oh, you're not cutting it.
You're right, I'm not. I know us.
But what's funny is, like, I forgot that intro existed, although I do have a note card of the notes I took while reading. The first note is just queer times two. So thank you, past self, super helpful there.
Yeah, about me.
But what I don't remember that intro. What I remember is the intro being, like, a man standing at the front of a room switching on a PowerPoint presentation called We Found an Alien, yeah! Whoops. And it's being like... I'm going to explain some stuff for a chapter. And he explained he explained the circumstances of finding this creature for so long. I literally thought that was going to be the frame narrative of the book.
Yeah, and then it just isn't. Like, and also the way that this guy is talking, he's literally just like reading narration aloud. Like, I could not imagine a human being. I was like, that guy is clearly already an alien because he is talking like a fucking Dickens novel.
Every single character in this book talks exactly like the narration. Or they have a weirdly folksy dialect.
Yeah, like, for some reason everyone is a bird. Like, they're always like, yeah, all you birds are making so much noise over there. I'm like, why is that a thing that people said in 1948? Like,
all you beautiful little sparrows won't stop chirping about the aliens.
Cute little finches. All you majestic... I was gonna say seagulls, but I don't think majestic and seagulls are two things that go together very well.
All you stupid, dumb motherfuckers stealing french fries on the beach. Living so in terror kind of the thing weird. That we accidentally brought in, and now we're going to gently thaw like a Thanksgiving turkey.
Okay, yeah, really quick, I love them being like the, so you have like, I think the biologist being like, you know, somebody's like, maybe we should like send this to New York where they have like facilities to dissect this alien that we found in the ice. And the biologist is like, here's a quote. This is too important to take any chances. There never was a find like this. There never can be again. It's the only chance men will ever have. It has to be done exactly right. So let's just jerry-rig a fucking autopsy on a kitchen table in the middle of Antarctica with literally no equipment. Because, you know, guys, we gotta make sure to do this right. Hand me the kitchen knife, I don't have a scalpel. Like,
there's literally lines where it's just like, Blair went back to chipping some ice off the thing. I don't know the proper way for de-thawing an ancient creature. It could be knife in kitchen.
I did also love the cook, like, as they're bringing the thing in, like, literally complaining about how everyone always does everything on, like, his kitchen preparation counter, because it's, like, the biggest table they have.
I loved him being like, you bring in the fucking dogs, I said that was okay, now you're bringing in the corpse of an alien creature, and where am I supposed to do my prep work?
Yeah. Meeson plus, MacReady. Oh, that means God. Everything in place.
I would... So, okay, a rewrite of this novella where everything is basically the same, except the chef is a high cuisine chef who is suffering his personal hell.
Can he also have a French accent? Because I feel like that just elevates it.
He would have a French accent, and it would be written out phonetically.
Oh, God. So, the intro of the novella literally is them all gathering around the body that they've already found, and somebody explaining how they found it. Mm-hmm. And compared to the intro of the movie, like, man, I was literally reading it and being like, the movie was so much better. Because, like, all of the stuff is still fairly the same, but the movie took it and it made it into, like, a fucking art form. Like, so you were right. The opening shot of the movie is just a dog running across the snow.
Yeah, because it's a happy movie. It's like Baldo.
And you see a helicopter chasing it, and these people trying to shoot it. And if this was in Alaska, you'd be like, I guess that's just what people do for fun. But it's not. It's in Antarctica, so you're like, what's happening? And so the dog reaches the American base. But basically, like, the people who are trying to shoot the dog don't speak the same language. Mm-hmm. And so they can't warn them.
I think they're Norwegian.
Yeah, I think they're Norwegian. They're
what a bizarre thing to just remember.
I know. Yeah, and then both of the people end up dying before they can communicate, like, why they were trying to shoot this dog. And so it kind of begins with this mystery of, like, what the hell happened to the Norwegian base and why were they trying to shoot this dog. And then the people actually go, you know, after the movie begins, and there they find this thing in a slab of ice, and they bring it back to their base. I'm, like, 90% sure that's actually what happens. I might be, like, crossing some wires. But, like, compared... I think, like, it's sort of the same thing that happens in the novella with the addition of, you know, the Norwegian team, which makes mm-hmm. sense because I think back then there were maybe less people in Antarctica to account for.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and it just makes it, like, so much more immediate and interesting, and it like, what the novella does is that it spends the entire beginning of the book answering questions, and what the movie does is it spends the entirety of its beginning setting up these questions that you really want to know the answers to.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. Because in a lot of ways, the novella does unfurl, like, a mystery, you know, the mystery of how do we figure out who is an alien and who isn't, who's being imitated and who is human. But it also... it's so interested in the mystery, like the mystery, like the process of deduction, not so much the process of suspense.
Yeah, I totally agree. It like the novella spends so much time explaining the various tests and stuff that they're going to do in order to try and determine who is human. And I literally, like, I didn't really get them because I just didn't care. You know, I did not mm-hmm. have the attention span or energy to, like, sit there and figure out what they were trying to do because it was just not that interesting to me. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, they're just going to test and see if it works. Yeah. And that will, the answer to the test will cause drama, not how the test works, mm-hmm. you know?
I did think, I liked the last test they use.
That was the one that they use in the movie, too, right?
Yes.
With the blood? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was clever. And it's also one that visualizes very easily, as opposed to the other ones, which are like, if the human blood reacts with the dog blood, which is also kind of like the rabbit blood that we did another experiment on, then the monster is not here.
Yeah.
Like, I can't... Okay. Like dumb me with a crayon being like, if A equals monster, then B is dog? And yeah. They add up... to murder.
And, like, the thing is, also, I feel like, I literally, as I was reading this, I was like, I feel like this book was written before science really, like, got invented, you know? Like,
when we were still figuring that stuff out.
We still had a lot of stuff that we were working out. Like, there's literally a quote where somebody is like, and I don't have it written down in front of me, but somebody's like, on a basic level, all organisms are made of jelly. It's like, I mean, I literally understand what you're going for, but, like, I don't think that's correct.
Well, I love, there's another line, which is, there's something like, telepathy, is that possible? And one of them says morosely, like, we must accept it. Someone's proven it already.
I literally screen capped that exchange. Because you were talking to me from reading The Exorcist about how, like, at a certain point, everybody just was like, yeah, telepathy definitely exists.
Yeah, it's bonkers. I can't wait. Jeezle Pete, coming back soon. We're going to discuss The Exorcist. I cannot believe the extent to which people just roll with telepathy in these genres. Like,
they're just like, yeah, you know, it's real.
Yeah. But I laugh every single time so goddamn hard when that one priest is like, she's speaking ancient Latin. She must be possessed. Oh, wait, though. She might just be reading my gosh darn mind. That doesn't God. Mean
anything. Oh, boy. Can't wait to read that. Yeah.
I think, too, in addition to the book itself being kind of obsessed with the science, I gotta go back to the writing, which
fine, yeah. There's a lot to unpack there.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I expected there's like a, even when there's not exclamation points, there's like exclamation points, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Could I read you a little bit?
Yes, please do. But actually, I was just going to say, the lack of exclamation points actually kind of makes it worse, because you could tell it's like, it almost feels like the author wrote the exclamation point at the end, and then like, backspace, and was like, no, we'll keep it classy, we'll keep it terse, we'll keep it manly.
He thought, because John Campbell who wrote it, and he was an editor of a very prominent sci-fi magazine, I can't remember off the top of my head.
And he makes a great cup of soup.
I hate you. So maybe his editor instincts came in and he was like, John, you get one exclamation point per sentence. No more. I meant paragraph, but I also... His second edit was being like, one per paragraph. But this is when they're all assembled so they can vote on whether or not they are going to thaw this alien out. And one character... the alien is still under a tarp, and one character is saying, we can't expect them to vote on something they haven't seen. How he expresses it.
It should be good.
How the hell can these birds tell what they're voting on? They haven't seen the three red eyes and that blue hair like crawling worms. Crawling. Damn, it's crawling there in the ice right now. Nothing Earth ever spawned had the unutterable sublimation of devastating wrath that thing let loose in its face when it looked around its frozen desolation 20 million years ago. Mad? It was mad clear through. Searing, blistering mad. And there's, that's like the middle section of a 10-paragraph rant.
Can you, like, take it from the middle and read it as if they're, like, without the exclamation marks? Like, just read it the way that it's written. Like, because you were definitely adding them, which, like, I will say, you clearly, like, there's supposed to be exclamation marks there.
I added one exclamation point.
But just, like, mad? It's all mad.
It's mad. Okay, hold on.
When it opened its eyes and looked... Please.
I'll do it. Listen. Nothing Earth ever spawned had the unutterable sublimation of devastating wrath that thing let loose in its face when it looked around its frozen desolation 20 million years ago. Mad? It was mad clear through. Searing, blistering mad. Did you like that take better?
The last sentence still had an exclamation
point. The last sentence does have an exclamation point. I enunciated.
Oh, it does? Okay.
Yes. I told you I would read the exclamation point. But I went back and I made sure I didn't have any others. Listen, the actors in the movie The Thing are very good. And they had very good dialogue, as far as I remember, in that it wasn't memorable, so it couldn't have been terrible, you know? I would pay for those very good actors to look at each other and say, hell, I've had bad dreams ever since I looked in those three red eyes. Nightmares. Dreaming the thing thawed out and came to life. That it wasn't dead or even wholly unconscious all those 20 million years, but just slowed. Waiting. You'll dream too, while that damned thing that Earth wouldn't own is dripping in the cosmos house tonight.
The thing is, that's very good, and you make a compelling point for why The Thing, the original movie, is actually a terrible movie, because it doesn't contain that.
I take it back. Everything I said about this writing, it's so good, and I just needed to read it casually.
I know, you just gotta read it aloud. But yeah, that's literally a character's dialogue, and it's kind of all like that. Which is not how people talk, but I guess that's beside the point.
It's not how people talk, but it's also, you know what? I wasn't alive in 1939 on a weird expedition to, I can't even remember if this is the North Pole or the South Pole, quite frankly. I think it's the South Pole,
Sarah. Yeah, it's the South
That's
Pole.
That's kind of important. Antarctica.
One thing also.
Is that Antarctica?
Are you seriously asking me if the South Pole is Antarctica, Sarah? Please, I just need to hear you articulate that. Are you asking me that question?
I can leave you to deal with your fucking eyes and your goddamn own, Amelia.
No, Sarah, please, they're so itchy.
It's Antarctica, right?
It is Antarctica, yes, it is.
Okay, because penguins are, like, they love sliding, so they slid to the bottom.
Yeah.
They're in Antarctica. Okay, hold on. Remake this story, but instead of the dog running at the beginning, it's just the penguin belly sliding its way across the continent.
Actually, that would be amazing. And then everybody still talks the way that the dialogue is written from this book. Okay, we've really struck gold here. I think that I can maybe get some funding to make this happen.
Can I read some more? You can cut it.
You can read some more, yes. This would be great.
This is one character arguing, they're having an argument about whether it's evil just because it looks evil.
Which seems like only the kind of argument that you find in 1940, like...
Like, look at its face.
Yeah, it's so ugly, it must be evil. Also, a point, like, which, you know, one of the characters is like, you're so prejudiced, how can you say this alien thing, maybe it looks beautiful to its people or something, and then, like, it is in fact evil and does in fact kill everybody, so, like, you did kind of undercut your philosophical point about judging a book by its cover there.
You can't judge a book by its cover. For example, that book on how to murder and eat people could be like a rom-com. and hey, to quote the book, just because it looks unlike men, you don't have to accuse it of being evil or vicious or something. Maybe that expression on its face is its equivalent of a resignation to fate. White is the color of mourning to the Chinese. If men can have different customs, why can't a so different race have a different understanding of facial expressions? To which a character replies, and I am going to articulate the exclamation points as I come across them.
Okay, I'm ready that I can prepare myself for that.
Okay. Peaceful resignation. If that is the best it could do in way of resignation, I should exceedingly dislike seeing it when it was looking mad. That face was never designed to express peace. It didn't have any philosophical thoughts like peace in its makeup. I don't know why it became... Lord almighty. That monster going...
By Jove.
I'm Colonel Sanders. No, I wandered away from it. I'm sorry. No, it's gone now. That thing grew up evil, adolesced, slowly roasting alive the local equivalent of kittens, and amused itself through maturity on new and ingenious forms of torture. And I'm right. Because it does kill a lot of us. But you know what surprised me? Not everyone.
Yeah, although one quick thing I want to talk about, because I think we're heading towards something resembling the spoiler zone with that assertion. I love, like, they spend so much time debating whether or not to thaw this thing out, because they're like, oh, it could have some form of microbiology which affects humans and creates a super plague. Oh, what if it's a virus? Oh, what if it actually comes back to life? And they're all like, you know, the doctor's like, all of you guys are dumb. That could never happen. Our biology is not compatible. It's clearly dead. It's all gonna be fine. And then literally, obviously, they thaw it and it comes back to life and it escapes. And his exact statement is, Copper stared blankly. It wasn't earthly, he sighed suddenly. I guess earthly laws don't apply. Do you think you maybe should have thought of that before?
Listen.
Like, right. It's an alien.
I love, he goes so hard into the fact where it's like, it's nothing like us. You can't get an illness from wheat because it's nothing like us. And then him being like, oh, it's nothing like us. So, maybe that,
so anything could happen.
It's bad.
I'm a scientist.
Also, him being like, that's crazy. It's like, that would be like getting a disease from a simian. I'm like, that happens quite frequently. We get a lot of diseases. Western civilization, according to Jared Diamond, has its big immune system because we lived right on top of some pigs and cows and all their shit, and we got all their illnesses, and then we got immune to them.
Yeah, that is actually an interesting.
Guns, germs, steel, motherfucker. Bring that in.
Did you notice that the author was, like, weirdly obsessed with people's heights? That's, like, the first detail he gives about every single character.
The precision. He's short, but he's very tough. He's 6'4" and 190 pounds.
Yeah, hang on, I literally have a quote right here. So it says, his eyes jerked and quivered in vague, fleeting glances at the four men with him. Barclay, 6 feet tall and weighing over 190 pounds. MacReady, a bronze giant of a man. Dr. Copper, short, squatly powerful. And Benning, 5'10" of wiry strength. Why? This is literally happening in the middle of the book. We've already met these characters. We don't need to know how tall they are. Unless the thing's power makes it so that it can't, like, identify what height they're supposed to be at, like...
I would have loved if every single character had gotten a canonical height in feet and in inches. Because you know this motherfucking author had a character sheet that had right next to it no personality traits, just how tall they were and what metal they resembled.
Yeah, literally.
This one's steel because he's efficient, but this one's bronze because he's tough.
That is quite
literally lead true. Because he's crazy.
Yeah. And honestly, I feel like that kind of tells you everything that you really need to know about the writing style, and not even in a bad way, because it is, it's just, I think you used the word quaint earlier, and I think that's a good way to put it, because it's like, it is just this kind of quaint, vaguely funny, still pretty good if you look past that, but like, clearly, mostly you're kind of laughing at it.
And clearly the basis of like, just a Cracker Jack story, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a great setup. They're in the Antarctic. They're in the Antarctic, which is different from the Arctic. Not many people know that, but I do.
Sarah, you were obsessed with Shackleton. You wanted to marry him as a child.
I'll be real.
You
I don't know whether he went
child
north or south.
To Ernest Shackleton. Oh my god, are you serious?
Yeah, he went to
north. You don't even know?
I think he went north.
All right, let's just move on really quickly before we have to dig into this.
I did have a hardcore crush in Ernest Shackleton. But you know what? None of his fucking expedition died, which means I'm doing a little better than you with your historical boner for Francis Crozier. He did eventually die, I think, on a polar expedition. Man just
Shackleton?
Loved snow. Yeah.
By golly, he just loved those icebergs.
By Jove, this snow... this really fondles my snowballs.
I'm sure that was an exact thought that you had as you were a child in love with Ernest Shackleton. But not entirely certain which direction to look for him in.
Listen. Okay, listen. Do I want to be in either place? Fucking no.
Yeah, that's fair. What were you going to say, Sarah?
I don't even remember. Was it about the terror? Oh, it was just that it's such a great setup for a story. And Arctic terror is so good, because you can have as much technology as you want. You can modernize the story as much as you want. You can set it. You can put whatever cast of characters you want in there. You can make them as competent or as incompetent as you need. And it's still going to be horrifying. It's going to be difficult. They're going to be isolated. And people are going to know instantly in a way that is like, hard to picture another setting except maybe a ship in the middle of the ocean. How isolated and how vulnerable everyone is.
Well, it's interesting, too, because it's this sense of simultaneous isolation and agoraphobia, where they're like, they're in the middle of nowhere and everything around them is basically preventing the characters from going anywhere. And I'm talking about both the terror and the thing and who goes there. So the very elements themselves are closing these characters into this isolated space. But at the very same time, there's a sense of this vast expanse around them, the knowledge that they are so far from anything. But also, you know, because you mentioned like a ship, but I think the difference is that you can theoretically go outside of the place that you're in when you're trapped in an Arctic location, because that is literally what happens on the Terra. You know, eventually they have mm-hmm. to leave the ships. And I think that's a really interesting component where it's like isolating, but also the sense that like the potential that you can journey out into this strange, alien, hostile world is so different from the sense of like, no, you really can't. Like, you're just on a ship. Like,
yeah.
it's like if you were on a ship and you had all this diving equipment, you know, and you had mm-hmm. the ability, like, oh, that's on the table. You could go underwater and you know, I think that's I'm really fucking
Are you realizing you're hitting the intersection of comparing Black Sails and the Terror and you're just nutting
I
too hard
I am literally
to
thinking about Black Sails right now. There's a scene where they're becalmed. But you
I'm
know the
sorry,
ocean
what?
Is becalmed?
Becalmed cannot be a real word. Is that a real
it's
word?
It's a fucking word. You dare to question my knowledge?
I'm sorry. Listen, I am not questioning your knowledge on either ships or cold places. I am just expressing amazement that such a specific but useful word exists. I was praising the depths of your vocabulary.
Well, all right. Fine. But I think that, like, if we're comparing Arctic Terror to the isolation that you get on a ship, it would only be the same if there was the ability to then journey into the ocean itself, because the mm-hmm. ocean's really the only thing that has that same sense of a totally alien world that is utterly hostile to human life,
yeah.
you know?
Which, utterly hostile to a lot, I mean, to, a, I would say a lot of life. That's really what's unique about the Arctic and the Antarctic. It's such a hostile area that it's not even home to the alien. The alien landed here and was like, fuck, and then
yeah.
like, got frozen. For
also, they,
a long time.
They spent so long explaining, like, wind speed and temperature,
yeah.
and that, like, never seemed to actually factor in at any point. They spent so long explaining how you can get lost within 10 paces during a blizzard, and I'm like, you don't need to explain that to me, the concept is pretty clear.
Yeah, it's pretty bad outside, and also, I don't think that ever really factored into the plot of the novella.
It did not.
Which is, like, it's funny, because he used almost the isolation, but not the cold. Not the fucking
yeah.
miserable cold.
And that's a big factor in the Terror, I think. But you know what? Not really, though, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Because it's like, I think in the book, actually, they touch a lot more on, like, how utterly miserable everybody is. Because they're like, hey, maybe we should just bring, like, a wool coat to, like, -50 degrees Fahrenheit temperatures. That should be fine, right? Like,
also, no one's allowed to spoon.
Yeah. There should have been spooning. They should have had that.
Are you saying the Terror
That's my
or,
next
like,
review.
The British Navy?
I guess all of the above. That's my main criticism both of the Terror as media and of the British Navy as a general concept. Needed more spooning. Things might have turned out better.
Needed more acceptance of spooning, because y'all know the spooning done happen.
Spooning but, like, definitely happened.
Y'all know. Listen, you know that whole thing in Who Goes There, where it's like four men always watching each other? I bet sometimes they're like, I'm just really tired, guys, so let's watch each other by, like, the little spoons and the big spoons, and we'll all just kind of hold hands, and then, like, if anyone becomes an alien, just start squeezing, and we'll get to it.
We'll get to it. I like that attitude.
Yeah, I was
we'll
gonna
just deal with it somehow.
I was gonna say something like, I would be useless in the circumstances of any of these stories, but, like, how the fuck did I get to the Arctic / Antarctic
yeah,
in the first place as, like, the world's most incompetent stowaway? As the world's least lucky stowaway?
God. You, like, Cornelius Hickey, like, I thought we were going to, like, the tropics, guys. We're going there still, right?
Are we taking... Guys, I think this is crazy. It's getting colder. Did anyone else notice that? Seems
yeah,
like it
weird.
Should be
That's
getting
crazy.
Warmer instead of colder. But it's
you know,
getting...
I was actually joking about how we were going to talk about the Terror a lot. I was a fool. Would you perhaps be interested in entering the spoiler zone? Because I have, like, a point about the book that I would like to discuss.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
I don't think it's actually going to be 5 minutes, because it's really just one thing that I want to talk about.
I got one thing I want to say, too.
Both the movie and the book. So I guess if you're on the hunt first, avoiding spoilers. So the opposite of that, if spoilers are hunting you for sport, you might want to skip this part.
Well, before we go to the spoiler zone, when the thing was released, the 1982 version, it got such negative reviews. It was like called junk. It was like, a quote, a wretched excess.
Oh my God.
People were like, it's too gory. It's too like, it's too nihilistic. It's repulsive. It came out at the same time as like E.T.
Oh my God.
And people were like, you know what? We picked which alien we like. It's not the tentacle motherfucker.
Which is ironic because E.T. scared the shit out of me as a kid, so
I
literally
had
nightmares about him.
I've never seen E.T.
He's fucked up. He's scary. He's scary. You know what? I'm gonna put my foot down. E.T. is scarier than the thing.
He does kind of look like a weird fetus.
Yeah, and there's like this scene where he's like dying and he's like all like pale and washed out and like lying and just looking really creepy. Ugh.
Are you faulting him for not being very cute as he lays dying?
Yeah. Come on, if the Arctic explorers in the Terror could still get it while they were literally dying of scurvy and lead poisoning, then...
Let's go to the spoiler zone.
Pale in comparison. All right. So, spoiler zone, starting now. I thought it was really interesting the fact that they had, like, 40 people in the book and, like, a quarter of that in the movie, and the fact that everybody dies in the movie, and they actually seem to do okay in the book.
Yeah, like 16 of them make it, which I think is what, like, probably the original crew in the movie, if not less.
Yeah. And I mean, the big problem with having such a large cast was that I didn't know who anyone fucking was. I mean, like, the only details you get are their heights.
Their heights, their opinions on, like, tables, and whether or not they're pro-thawing out this alien. And honestly, yeah. I could not keep straight who was who.
Yeah. They don't have a metallurgic association, then I was lost.
I ended up having to glance on Wikipedia just to double check who had died and who hadn't.
Mm, yeah.
But like, all in all, like, at least like 50% of them made it, which is a pretty good ratio for Arctic horror, honestly.
Yeah.
Actually, it's fucking amazing.
That's phenomenal. If you think about it, the Terror,
Alien versus Predator, you got one.
Yeah. We're running out of Arctic horror.
Although, actually...
Well, the thing, they literally all die, so...
Yeah, Ernest Shackleton, though, he got them all out, so that's my boy Ernest.
Control your boner for Ernest Shackleton. You don't even know anything about him.
I'm sorry if I just love cool competence in the face of adversary.
Yeah, you should apologize for that. You should be like me and love cool incompetence in the face of adversity.
Also, the fact that the thing being left alone in the cabin for like a week almost built anti-gravity and like an atomic engine. That's different. I don't remember that from the book.
That did not happen in the book. I think in the book it might have been trying to from the movie. I think in the movie it might have been trying to like rebuild a spaceship or something, but like the fact that he just invents an anti-gravity jetpack that one of the characters just tries out, and that's like the climax of the book.
Which again is why the book is better than the movie, because instead of having two men facing each other waiting to die, knowing that they don't trust each other, but also knowing how futile it is not to trust each other in the face of their imminent death.
Yeah, they're like beyond trust. Yeah, like it doesn't even matter whether they trust each other anymore because they both know that they're going to die. So even if they aren't human, like it doesn't even matter anymore. God, I love that ending.
Let's swap that out for most of them being all right, having just cattle prodded like 16 of their friends to death, and then one of them being like, "This is a jetpack," and it's just him like
bouncing around
the
back, literally. You're right. Now that I say that aloud, that is a better ending. God. That ending of the movie is so good. That's like one of my favorite
That ending. That is honestly endings. One of the only things I remember about. I remember the opening shot, I remember the ending shot, and I remember that the team was Norwegian. That the other team was Norwegian.
Again, a very strange cherry-picking of facts to have.
I don't pick what the old dome locks in.
So, any final takeaways from...
Final takeaways. My God, what a queer read.
By Jove.
By Jupiter? A jetpack-powered tentacle monster. That's what my fetish looks like. He came from a bluer sun, and I have blue balls. By Jove, queer ejaculation. It's me, Isaac Asimov, and this has been my gay erotica.
Oh boy, that's very good. Yeah, I guess that's my biggest takeaway. This should have been this should have been exactly what you just described. It should have been a fun gay erotica romp with lots of queer ejaculations that ends with them just playing with a jetpack for the last 20 pages.
And the tentacles.
I could do without those.
The wiggling worms, always wiggling, even in the ice. By God, I've had dreams about those wiggling worms. Weird dreams. Lots of dreams. Let's thaw out the guy.
Well,
Well, I'm Sarah.
If you want to find us on social media, you can find us at SpinesCast on Twitter. And at Crack Spines Podcast on Tumblr. And you can find us at crackspinescast.podbean.com if you want to find some more of our episodes. So this is something that we should have discussed at literally any point before we started recording. What are we going to listen to next? I meant read.
Well, we have a couple different options. One is a book I found on Ernest Shackleton.
Okay, I'd literally be down for that, though. You know that I'm still dick hard for the Arctic.
Okay, but here's the thing. It's not the book I found when I... It's not the book that I read when I was 12 about the Endurance and his amazing journey. And it was full of, like... It was, like, so exciting. Like,
hey, apparently Sarah, where was the journey through?
It was through a cold place, Amelia. It was through the North. Because... Fuck the South. I didn't find that book. I think I might have donated it because I'm a fucking idiot. But I did find a book I purchased, which is about for business managers and how they can learn how to be better business managers by learning from Ernest Shackleton.
Are you kidding me? Yes, we are reading that. We are absolutely reading that.
I bought it for 50 cents from the used bookshop.
Oh my God. All right. Strong contender. Let's say tentatively that's what we're reading next. Do you know what it's called off the top of your head?
Off the top of my dome? Let me double check.
Maybe you should also take us a brief moment to just read perhaps the back of the book or maybe even the book jacket and see which continent Ernest Shackleton explored.
Okay, I do not need this. It is somewhere, listen, I have 17 notebooks around me. I can't be expected to find
Listen, guys, if you've been relying on our end of episode thing for which book we're reading next to, like, accurately determine what our next episode will be, you're already not having a good time.
It's probably going to be about Ernest Shackleton, or it might be Pride and Prejudice, because I've been wanting to give that one a reread. Or
Persuasion, because I'm actually currently reading that.
Oh, shit. What if we did a combination Ernest Shackleton-Jane Austen combo, and we just talk about... Which Austin hero would have died the first in the Terror?
Oh my God.
Darcy?
I feel like it would be Darcy.
I feel like Darcy would be killed. Pride and Prejudice and the Arctic.
I mean, I would absolutely read that book, like, instantly. In fact, that is possibly the best idea that I've ever heard. Second, of course, to Isaac Asimov's gay erotica romp with jetpacks.
With jetpacks. By Jupiter.
Alrighty. Oh! Oh, because Jove is like... That's... Oh!
Oh my God. This has been Cracked Spines. I'm Sarah. That's Amelia.
I'm Amelia, I just realized something, and that's Sarah, and she still doesn't know where Ernest Shackleton went, so we're neither of us doing great, but we try.
Listen,
we try
don't
so
go
hard.
To the Arctic or Antarctica. It's not that hard. Don't go to either. They're melting, and we're polluting them, and they're cold, and don't go there. It's not
Leave
that hard.
Leave them alone. They deserve better than us. Remember how we said this episode was going to be 25 minutes long? All right, guys, this has been Crack Spines. See you next time.